You know, you see the picture up there, and it reminds me of Brother Siegenthaler. You know, one of his favorite fishing stories, especially when I'm standing next to him, is the time that he took me fishing. We pull in, he gets set up, he throws that line out, and fish just seem to crowd each other to jump on the line and come in, you know. He stays this one spot, and I mark that spot. I go about 20 feet earlier, you know, 20 feet away, and maybe I get a nibble, maybe something happens, but, you know, obviously at the end of the day, his bucket was a whole lot more full than mine if I had any. He tells me, don't take my spot in the morning. Well, what am I going to do? In the morning, I get up before him, I run out there in that spot, and I'm casting out, and I pull the fish in. He comes out and chastises me and say, wait a minute, you took my spot. So he moves over 20 feet or so to my spot, and he throws his line out, he sits down ready to open his tackle box, and he's already got the biggest fish of the day on the line. And he continues to rub it in all day long like that. So, you know, I see something like this, I think of Dick and like Jameson. I know what I'm going to do if I ever go fishing with him next time. I'm going to take a net, something I can throw out there and catch it, because either in a boat or something like that, I'm going to take a drag net and just going to throw out there, and I'm going to grab everything possible. And somehow, by net, I'm going to at least hopefully catch up with him. Jesus told a parable of fishermen fishing with a net. If we look in Matthew chapter 13, verse 47 to 50, we'll go into that and describe it in just a moment. But the reason fishermen use nets is because you catch more fish than you do with the line. It's a different approach. If you had to survive on what you caught, you'd find the most efficient way. You'd find the most effective way. And there's a difference, if you're fishing for salmon, if you're fishing for steelhead, you're fishing for trout, there are certain methods and places and ways that you do, and you tailor your skills and your equipment to just that. If you're fishing with a net, they, again, know certain places to go, well, they'll throw it out and they'll get a great number of different things, which we'll go into in just a minute. The parables that Jesus talks about, first of all, he's near the Sea of Galilee. It says in the beginning of the chapter that he comes out of the house and sits down by the sea. So you're in the company of people who are familiar with the story he's talking about. They've seen people in their boats throwing this dragnet out, and they throw it out in an area, they pull the bottom closed, and then they bring up the harvest. Or they're out in shallow water, they throw it out and pull that top lanyard, which then encloses the catch, and they get all sorts of different critters. Well, Jesus told some parables prior to that, and we've been talking about these in the previous weeks. The parables are intended to move the hearers to action. They're intended to give them a better understanding of the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven isn't as much a place as it is the company and the family and the association of his people. He wants these people, all of us, to be in that kingdom, and it takes a certain type of person to subject himself or herself to their Lord in order to achieve that. You've got to want to achieve that. So we're going to be talking about the parables, and we're going to talk about some application of that and what the messages are, and then draw it to a we're going to tie the net at the bottom and pull it in at the end of the message. So he's led to an understanding. We're given glimpses in to help us understand really what his kingdom is. It's not that he's hiding it. It's just that there's a bit more that you can chew at one particular time. So he says, well, it's like a sower in a soil. And you may be familiar with the message. If not, take time and read it. We talked about the sower sowing the seed in certain soil, which later he relates to the hearts of mankind are receptive to it and do something and grow with it. He talks about the wheat and the tares, where a harvest is thrown out. But and at night, when they're resting, an enemy comes and throws evil seeds, throws weeds, if you will, in there and corrupts the harvest. And how that harvest is then sorted out and distinguishing the good from the bad. We talk about the magnificent growth of a small seed, the mustard seed, into a huge tree that provides shelter and food to many. We talk about the leaven, where you take just a small bit of yeast and put it in three pecks of dough and then make so much more because of the influence of that yeast. Talk about the treasure, where the man found a treasure and sold all he had in order to attain that because he valued it and saw great significance there. Or the pearl, a similar type of thing. That pearl was worth everything that the individual had. So why is he telling us all this? These are nice stories. Some people heard the stories and said, yeah, that was entertaining, and then left. He's giving us glimpses into the kind of people, the kind of situations that we are going to be addressing in our lives. And those who want to follow him and commit to him need to spend some time understanding, which I hope we're doing this day. So Matthew chapter 13, verses 10 through 17, we read, and he's talking about those who may or may not have been following this. And he says, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled. Those people, in other words, who are hearing it and not understanding it. You will keep on hearing and will not understand. You will keep on seeing, but not perceive. For the heart of this people has become dull. Their ears scarcely hear. Their eyes have, they've closed their eyes. Otherwise, they would see with their eyes, hear with their ears, and understand with their heart in return, and I would heal them. That is describing people who were standing there listening to the Son of God explain what this kingdom is that he's proclaiming. And some said, yeah, okay, which channel do I turn to next? You know, or, you know, I'm hungry. That was nice stories we're going to go on. They're not allowing these messages to change them. It's the same with people all around, maybe some in this audience. You're distracted with the things that are in your mind. Your mind's thinking of what you're going to do afterwards. Your mind's thinking of the whatever it may be around you. You just kind of aren't really letting things apply. What I'm asking you to do, I know it's difficult, but spend some time and see if we can get some good out of the lesson here, some message. And don't be hearing and not hear, and seeing and not see. Because the rest of that is the other half of the group. You know, hopefully that's most of us here. That's all of us here. But he says to those who the disciples who were asking, help me to understand and apply this message. He says, blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For truly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and didn't see it, and hear what you hear and did not hear it. We've got an opportunity. Every time we open God's word, every time you're gathered here, hopefully the bearer of the message is competent enough to deliver it as God would have it to be delivered, and let you understand that there's a significant message here. There's something that applies to you, and it's not instructions on how to catch more fish than Dick. It's something in this message that applies and helps us to understand that we are going, you know, how we're going to live our lives and what our destiny is really going to be. So if you'll open your Bibles or read here on the screen, I'm going to read Matthew chapter 13, verses 47 through 50, the parable of the dragnet, a parable of the net, however you wish to adjust it. So again, the kingdom of heaven is what the subject is like a dragnet cast into the sea, gathering fish of every kind. And when it was filled, they drew it up on the beach. They sat down and gathered the good fish into containers, and the bad they threw away. So there's life, something that's very familiar with those who are hearing it. And then he applies it and says, so then it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come forth and take out the wicked from among the righteous and will throw them in the furnace of fire. And in that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So he's given us a comparison right there and given us an explanation of the application. So let's take them and put the two sections side by side. We've got a net that's thrown into the sea and gathered fish of every kind. This is something that is familiar to, again, the people there, maybe now with the images we've shown, it's something that you can envision. And then Jesus gave his explanation that believers of every kind are also gathered. And so they threw the net out, and they didn't draw it in until it was full. And when it was full, men drew it ashore. They sat and sorted the catch. God, the good or useful fish were kept. You know, sometimes if you're hunting for something to eat and you catch a sand shark or a ratfish or something, you know, just more trouble than it's worth, you know, you don't want that. You're after this particular one, or maybe a certain one is in season. You're going to choose those carefully. The bad or the useless fish were thrown away. So there's the lesson that was there. So then he says, well, this is going to be similar to the close of the age. Whenever God's net, if you will, is full, whenever that time has come, he's going to draw in everyone. And then he's going to send his messengers, the angels, and they're going to separate the evil from the righteous, the good from the bad. He's going to make this partition. The righteous or the useful will be preserved. The evil or the useless or the destructive will be thrown into the fiery furnace. Now, look at that again. The furnace doesn't destroy, but it separates the righteous from the unrighteous. And those in the furnace are going to continue to be aware because there's a weeping and a gnashing of teeth. So those fish, if you will, don't want to be there. But you can see the contrast in the lesson. There will be a sorting out among all mankind, among all the Lord's church, among this congregation, in me. You can keep on reducing it down, whether I'm of the righteous or the unrighteous, the useful or the useless. And that's the core of the message there. The net doesn't discriminate. You know, there's my catch from Lake Jamieson there. Throw that net out, I'm going to catch everything. And I may catch, you know, I don't know, bass, trout, crappie, I don't know, whatever, all sorts of different fish. You know, some of them are going to be useful for some use and some of them aren't. The wide variety are gathered, you know, physically. God's net, God's gospel affects everybody. And that's kind of interesting. Every single bit of good in the world comes from God. Every single bit of evil comes from rejecting God. Take any example you've got, you know, whether you're talking about government, whether you're talking about nation or different nations, individuals, cities, people at work, whatever else. Those people who have trouble are the ones that are rejecting God. Those who are doing more in their life righteously are going to have a different spin. But people may not admit to being a Christian or may not admit to following him, but the more their goodness in their life, the more like God, the more of God's gospel they've accepted. So that net impacts everybody. And let's take us in one of the earlier parables and compare, because there's a lesson here that we need to look at. Just as the message with the gospel, you know, it goes out freely, the kingdom is a mixture of the righteous and the unrighteousness, and it's inevitable that the good and the bad will be mixed. Since God has provided the gospel, you know, he'll do the final sorting. Well, he tells us this parable of the tares. And there's a reason these are all in the same association. With the tares, or weeds, we learn that the wheat and tares are allowed to grow together. When the farmers, the crop workers, discovered that an enemy had come and thrown evil seeds in, you couldn't rip it all out because you may damage some of the ones that are good. So the guide, the owner of the farm, said, let it grow. And then at the end of time, whenever the harvest has come, we'll take all the tares, all the weeds, and we'll gather them up and we'll burn them. But we'll take them, they're separated from the good, from the righteous, from the useful, and we'll keep those. So we can see there's a parallel already. You're probably way ahead of me. With the dragnet, there's fish of every kind, useful and unuseful, right? In the net, just like the tares and the wheat. We see there's a harvest time. There's a sorting, either waiting at the for the harvest to grow and taking the tares first and then seeking the the wheat, or in the shore, they're taking the useful and putting those in the containers. The useless are thrown into the fire and separated. The lessons are similar, but there's a huge difference. In one case, there's an enemy who's planted the tares among the wheat. In one case, the harvesters said, well, let's let it grow, and then we'll take the invading tares and we'll burn them. Here, the good fish and bad fish are mixed. There's no real sinister plot to put useless people or people who have submitted to evil among the good. It just happens. And that's what he's saying. And so in one perspective, the devil has infiltrated the Lord's kingdom. There's always a temptation in mankind to reject what's right and go to wrong. There's always, seems to be in every situation, somebody who's trying to subvert whatever good there is. It just is. And so the Lord recognizes that with the lesson within his kingdom. There are some who are committed to doing his will and some that seem to be committed to destroying it. It just is. Those people who call themselves, we'll use the air quotes, Christians, will have a variety of approaches to life. Within the Lord's people, within maybe the net that's gathering, you'll have some that are committed and some that aren't. And sometimes it'll change as the life goes on and things such as that. What he's telling us is we need to strive, if you will, to be the right kind of fish. So who are the good fish that are gathered up? Who are the ones that the Lord would sort out? Let's take these parables again. The parable of the wheat. He's looking for the in my analogy? The fish, the wheat, the grain. He's looking, the ones that are selected are the ones that are bearing fruit. The wheat, in that case, are the ones that are useful. Or in this case, the seeds being spread. Some places, distractions of life are destroying it. But we're looking for that fertile soil, that heart, if you will, in saying, who's going to literally let this word take root? We're looking for the mature. You're going to take in the wheat and the tares. You're going to take those that have grown up and are bearing fruit and are serving God in righteousness, and they're going to get the others out of the way, whether they're people with evil intent or whatever it may be. God's looking for the mature. He's looking for the growing, the lesson of the mustard seed, to take whatever kernel of faith you have right now and do what you can to let it grow, to make it glorify and honor God. Yeah, you can let life's distractions muzzle your efforts, but that's what this lesson is about, is saying don't let that happen. Decide that you can improve where you are. You've been carrying a Bible with you back and forth. Well, let's make a commitment to open it and start reading it. Let's take some lessons. Take this outline home and see if it's any use and work on it. Look at the others. In other words, try to improve what you got. He's looking for the active, the yeast who has an influence on that peck of flour. He's looking for the good part out of that is the active, the one who actually does something with the kernel of faith that God has given him or her. He's looking for those who value the message, and he's looking for those who treasure the privilege of being his servants, of being the gospel. The value of this message that we have here that really gives us the compass and the direction in our lives. That's what he's after. He's looking for the useful. He's going to draw that net around us, and he's going to pick those people who are useful to him and valuable to him. And sadly, those others are going to be put in a place that's full of regret, remorse. I wish I had. I shouldn't have done it. I had every opportunity. All these things are going to be there. That's the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. And that's what he's telling us. He says, men and brethren, I value you. Don't hear and not hear. Don't see and choose not to see. Take the lessons that God is presenting to you and know that God is talking directly to me, to you, and saying, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to let it take root? Are you going to use something? Are you going to become mature? It's really, we're faced with something. Even today, we're faced right now with a choice. Your Christian brothers, the elders, the deacons, they have no way of deciding for you what your attitude is going to be. We talked about that in this morning's class. What your approach to life is going to be is all up to you. All we're doing as a collective group is trying to help you to choose the right way, trying to help you when times are tough, trying to help you spiritually. We're not a financial institution. We're not there to provide welfare. We're there to provide spiritual welfare and growth. We're here to help one another be better, because I want to be harvested and kept. I don't want to be harvested and put in that furnace where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's all my choice. It's really up to me. And so as we talk about, you know, the message, it's really up to us whether we follow him or reject him. For the non-Christian, it becomes a choice whether he abandons his own life compass and decides to say, I'm going to follow Jesus Christ. That's a hard thing to do. If someone's running off in life and full mode of self-destruction, for him or her to decide, you know, this just isn't working, and to turn that course and change. You can change from a tear to a wheat grain. You can change from a useless fish to a positive fish. Just not take those analogies too far and think you're born in a particular type. Now, this is something that's our choice. Otherwise, he wouldn't be giving us these lessons. These are our messages for us. So, speaking of messages, what is his message to me? What's my takeaway? What's my application? What do I do with this? Well, first, our responsibility is to learn to think like Christians. Learn to do something with the knowledge we've got. You know, we had a question this morning. It says, how many of you think you think emotion, you know, make emotional decisions, and how many of you think make logical decisions? And very few people said they make emotional decisions, and most people who raised their hand, you know, said they make logical decisions. And I hope that's the case. But what I showed was some illustrations where we really find ourselves overruling our reasoning, going with what we want, going with what we treasure. I don't want to say I'm going to be part of this congregation and be accountable to them, because then I can't be gone and do whatever else, you know, I might have wanted to do. Or I don't want to accept a responsibility because then it limits me on other days, or whatever, you know, is running through your mind. It's not for me to choose, but it's a decision that you make. So what Jesus tells us in every single lesson is to be transformed, to be converted, to become a new person. And that, whether you've been a faithful Christian all your, you know, the majority of your life, you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 80s, 90s, whatever it might be, there is still room for growth. There's something that you can be doing, an application that you can do. You can stretch yourself more. Does God ask for anything less? Now here comes the tough one. You know, hey, Richard, you were doing just fine until you hit that next slide. We talk about sharing the gospel. That's hard. If I had to feed myself with a fishing line and catching things, I'd be a lot thinner than I am now. If it was all up to me to go with one person and to teach him and show him the route of salvation, that person's in trouble. You know, I'm not going to be as effective. You know, some fishermen are much better, you know, than I might be. But I can do, you know, there are going to be times when I am the right person. If you think back of the story of Esther, there was a great disaster coming upon her nation, and Mordecai, her uncle, said, how do you not know that God has prepared you in this position for this task? And that's really what he always asks you and me. God has prepared you and me to this particular point, and we're responsible for what we know right now. And you, in whatever situation he places you with, are the right person for the job. Yeah, but there are others. No, God has you and that person in contact, and you are the right person. I can think of a guy, been a Christian for a very short period of time, came to a new state, was introduced to a young lady who was searching, and he'd only been a Christian for a short time, but whatever God had given him, he was able to share with that person. And it was inadequate. But every time that girl asked questions, he had to go back and study. he came back and answered that one, and she had six more. Went back and forth, and eventually she then became a Christian. He grew in faith, and later on I married her. But that's a different story. The point is, I wasn't ready. But God says, use what you've got. Maybe your net is small and there's a whole lot of fish. Fine, cast that net. So let's talk about that. Five ways to share the gospel. Well, first of all, one by one, we like fishing by line and hook. And that's what I always think. When sharing the gospel, I think, okay, I've got to go out and talk to Joe Dinglethorpe, and I've got to find out what his issue is, and I've got to have all the answers to persuade him. Well, okay. If you're capable of doing that, God bless you, and go forth and fish. But there's another way. And like I say, if I ever go with Dick to Lake Jameson again, legal or not, you know, I'm going to get a dragnet if I plan to catch fish. And so it's called broadcasting, or nowadays it's called networking. In other words, do something with what, you know, talk about what interests you. If you're embarrassed about something, well, you find excuses to not talk about it. You may not want to talk about your faith in Jesus because you don't want people to hold your faith against you, or you don't want them to hold you accountable for the faith you say you have. You know, if people think I'm a good guy, that's fine. They'll have a certain standard. But if I tell them I'm a Christian, now wait a minute. Now they've upped the standard, and boy, do they have a good magnifying glass, you know, and they're going to hold me to that. So I've got to walk a little bit more carefully because I'm representing Christ if I claim to be a Christian. Maybe you'll disregard people and reject them before even addressing them because, well, they're not the type of person that you feel you can convince. In other words, I'm going to fish for this fish. I'm not going to let that one go because I've got, you know, I know how to do this one. I don't know how to do that one. It's a very good tendency. But let's talk about fishing with a net. You're not fishing with a hook. And so what do? You're going to talk to about what you believe. Do you believe in Jesus Christ? Do you believe that being a Christian is better than not being a Christian? Do you believe that others should really share in the faith that you've got? Can you tell them what you know? Can you just talk wherever you are? This week I had a strange caller at the door. First of all, we got a no soliciting sign. It's always funny how people say, well, that doesn't apply to me. But this is one of the strangest guys I've ever known. He was well-dressed. He was a guy with a, you know, mature, probably in his late 50s or so. And I really had difficulty figuring out what it was he was selling. But he gave me a paper and was talking about something that really, again, I think God brought him because maybe it helps with this illustration. I don't know. He was promoting college education and college planning. And he left me with an article, and I'll paraphrase some of it. He says, "We make ourselves busy and focus on our narrow circle of friends and even the internet interest without interacting as much with people in our community." Does that sound right? You know, especially with anyone who might hold a different opinion or values from us. Think of your circle of friends. They're all kind of like you, you know, to a degree. Or if they're not, you don't talk about stuff that would be different. Look around your neighborhoods. Most days they're emptied when the adults go to work and the kids go to daycare or school. With fewer adult homemakers raising fewer kids than in decades past, there are fewer opportunities to interact with neighbors and their kids. I've lived in the same place for 30 years, and I barely know the people on either side of me. And the people I used to know are gone, but, you know, I just don't interact other than, hi, you know. And frankly, if I saw them out of context, I may not even recognize them, you know. So I've got a failing there. It says, when people are home with countless TV channels and web entertainment, there's always a show that uniquely matches our interests. Who has time for talks with strangers in our neighborhood who don't perfectly share our interests or like our internet or chat friends? Does that work for you? You realize that I'm comfortable with the people I'm comfortable with, and most of them are just like me. And those that aren't like me, we kind of have borders drawn, and I'm not going to talk about this, and you're not going to talk about that, and we're cool, right? That's the way we live. If not always, that's the way we are nowadays. What he was saying is, his message is, I want to teach people how to, you know, take your values and be willing to challenge others with it. I'll help you in college placement because you take a conservative approach to life, which is totally rare and unique. It'll make you stand out, but I'm not selling college planning, so I'll get back to my lesson. The part of this message is that we seldom talk with people who don't already agree with us. And on those rare occasions where we do, we tend to hide our convictions in order to avoid any hint of conflict, just in case they may hold different convictions. Does that hit home? It sure does me. So now we're getting kind of on the uncomfortable fringes. I'm not really ready to go out and cast a line and maybe have a one-on-one class all the time, or maybe I am, and I bless you that who those are, but when someone comes in here and fills out a card and said, I'd like to have a Bible study, most people say, oh, Chad, here's the card, or elders, you take care of it. I don't have a lot of people saying, oh, let me have that one, let me talk. And I would encourage you to do so if you can. But networking is like throwing a net. So you associate with people who aren't like you and share the word with them. Well, how do you do that? That's kind of getting scary, isn't it? Well, fishing a line is fine, with a line is fine, but you'll catch more with a net. In other words, share your conviction with others. We do have associations with people who don't agree with us. And at least be willing to say, when I was, someone says, what'd you do this weekend? And you'll think of everything you did Saturday. Well, I met with the saints at church, and we had a great lesson on casting a net. That's all you have to say. Is that easy? They will take it and run with it and ask more questions, or they'll change the subject or whatever else. You've done something. You've said something. Just be willing to mention who you are and what you have. It's not really that hard. You just have to say, I'm willing to cross that barrier. So PTA, scouts, athletics, weight loss programs, work, crafting, whatever it might be, just talk about what you're doing. Talk about what interests you. Talk about, a moral dilemma that you made the right choice in. Whatever you can throw out, or if this group of whatever association you might have is making a decision, such as those maybe that the scouts have gone through publicly here recently, you've got a lot of people to talk about if you decide to make a choice with whether you support that particular group at this particular time. There's conversation there. Just be willing to declare your values, that's all. If you read and study, you'll find that you're really more prepared than you believe you are. God chose fishermen for his followers. Jesus was at the Sea of Galilee, and he saw men fishing. And he then said, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. Now, men don't bring in a very good crop when you try to turn them in for food. So he's telling them, you've got the ability, you understand the concept. I'm going to call you to a higher calling. And fishing for men is doing the same thing. You throw that broad net out and say, these are my convictions. Anyone want to talk about it? This is what I believe. During times of political campaigning, some people are pretty free to express their opinions because they have that energy, that enthusiasm, that investment in whatever side it is, whatever candidate it might be. That is all going to go away. 2 years, 4 years, 6 years away, that candidate's going to be either up again, you got to do it all over again, or replace him. And at the end of time, doesn't matter whatever political party it was. What matters is his association with Jesus Christ. So why not just talk about where you are? Why not admit to people that you're a Christian? That's not all that hard, is it? Admit that you believe in Christ. Because when Jesus says the passage here in Mark 3 and 38, for whoever is ashamed of me and my words, doesn't that kind of fit with what we were just talking about? Is in this adulterous and sinful generation, does that apply now? The Son of Man will also be ashamed of him when he comes in the glory of his Father with his holy angels. So God's got a net around this congregation. He's sorting the useful from the useless, the valuable from the one who've chosen not to, the mature from those who have chosen to be immature. Think of all that sorting that's going on among us. Whoever's ashamed of me and my words, I'll be ashamed of. So isn't this a passage referring to the same kind of sorting we've been talking about? It's talking about God's angels, you know, sharing among us and sorting you and me out. These lessons need to be applied. You think you'd benefit more from the wisdom of God if you actually spent more time with it and decided, hey, that was, you know, I just endured this guy talking for 30 minutes. Or, you know, he said some things that got me thinking and I'm going to take the time to think about them. You know, that's what we're talking about. Discuss it among others. Yeah, attending services is a very important thing because here you get those thoughts. Maybe you're almost in some cases associating with someone who doesn't think like you. Yes, he does, but he or she, you know, the person presenting the lesson is going to throw a challenge out, and it kind of makes you a bit uncomfortable. And when we're uncomfortable, we either run off and avoid it, or we decide, okay, what am I going to do to overcome this? If I need to change, I'll change. But if I need to avoid that company, I'll avoid it. But if you come here and you have a lesson that you see, it does really make sense according to God's word and requires something of you. Remember that big red choice that I've got on the previous screen? It's up to you to decide whether you're fruitful, whether you're going to be growing, whether you're going to put yourself out on the line and really say, okay, you know, I can do that. Or if I can't, I can develop the ability to do it with a little bit more effort. I'm not here to beat up anybody. You know, this lesson, like it is always, anytime you study any lesson with any great amount of time, it impacts you, and it has impacted me. I'm hoping I'm going to change some things, you know, that I've been neglecting. But it also means that you and I need to do something about it. Are we going to be useful or useless? Are we, when during the harvest, which way are we going to be? Jesus' words in parables always achieve his purpose. They always have an impact on us. You are the best one to determine your usefulness. Nobody else can. I can't evaluate you. You know where you're falling short. You know where you excel. But you are the one that can decide which kind of fish or grain or yeast you might be. You are the one who will determine your fate. It's not up to me. I'm one of the elders here, and I have a charge that you've given me to try to encourage you and to warn you when you're kind of going to the edge. But I don't know everything. Dick does, but I don't. You know, we want you to help you, but we have a charge to do that, but we can't. I cannot make decisions for you. I cannot. I don't know what's going on in your mind. But you're the only one that can determine that. So would you describe yourself as good soil? As mature wheat, as someone who's willing to sacrifice the worldly treasures for the faith that you say you have? You can answer that. I can't. It's really up to you. It's with a net, talking about what you believe, about what you believe to others, you've got to decide, I'm not going to let my embarrassment overcome me. I'm going to actually admit to people that I'm a Christian, and that sets me a certain standard, and I'd be happy to discuss those standards and why you would benefit from it. If you don't believe that, let's talk about helping you understand it yourself. You know, that's what we do together. We share and we help one another. So with that in mind, you can go fishing with a hook and line, you can go fishing with a net, but God wants you to go fishing. So those that enter the kingdom of heaven will want to be there and will work for it. That's what his application is. The value of the they'll take the value of the message and you'll act on it. You can either say, yeah, okay, I heard another one, that's fine, or you'll do something with it. And so there's just one little nugget you can get from that. Take it. You're going to examine yourselves daily. You're going to find opportunities to spread your message. You're going to either directly tailor it for specific people. Again, whatever person God puts in front of you, you are the unique one that can address them. You are the one that God has prepared and put in that position, and that heart is ready for you, God has prepared you and you can do it. But otherwise, just show the enthusiasm of something you say you believe that's changed your life and kept you out of trouble. You know, the enthusiasm for, show your enthusiasm for something you're honored to be a part of and that you value above all else. And trust Jesus to be there with you. So then when you read passage in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 8, do not be ashamed of the testimony of our Lord for me, as Paul was writing, a prisoner, his prisoner, but join with me in the suffering of the gospel according to the power of God. Be willing to step up and do a little bit more than what you're doing. And most of that is your personal conversations with others and then your personal growth, your personal application. And so when we read a passage in such as 2 Timothy 2:15, be diligent to present yourself approved to God as a workman who does not need to be ashamed, accurately handling the word of truth. You get better every day. As you now, if someone asks you to describe or to explain this particular lesson, you can do it. So I urge you to go fishing with a net. Live the Christian life by working and developing your Christian thinking, your attitudes and your thoughts required to make yourself pure and holy before the Lord. Talk about your life as Christians with anyone you can. God will send the right people to you. Some will be affected positively, some won't. It's okay, it's not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to give them the opportunity. He will give you the words you'll need since you're sharing what you've learned by living the life you chose when you committed to Christ. So then, when the net is cast by God and his angels sort out the catch, you'll be one of the useful ones that he keeps. So the passage we read at the beginning and that I've got on the board that talks about the messages that God has delivered, he says, these things have been written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and believing you can have life in his name. Believe what's been said here and you'll have life in Jesus' name. That's all I've got this morning. I'm going to ask Jeff to come up with the song he's selected. Let's stand together and we'll sing with our own voices in praise to God.